are listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon, listener-sponsored non-commercial community radio online at kboo.fm. Show is People Rise Up. My name is Andrew Geller, and today we are going to be speaking about sunset commissions. And joining me to talk about what sunset commissions are, whether or not they're really effective, and why is Congress trying to fast-track several different bills through at this point in time, I have on the phone Robert Schull. He is the Director of Regulatory Policy with OMB Watch in Washington, D.C., and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, let's just start out with basics of what is the idea of sunset and where did the idea come from in the context of legislation, federal or state level?
Sure. Well, the basic concept, or at least that we're seeing now, is the idea of an unelected commission with the power to sit in judgment over all government programs or most government programs to recommend whether or not they live, die, or get realigned in some way, and then to push those recommendations through Congress on a fast-track, take-it-or-leave-it basis with very limited debate and no room for amendment. The concept really emerged at the state level back in the 70s. A lot of good government groups saw this as a way of bringing more accountability to programs and as a way of keeping their budgets in check. And so there were actually a lot of public interest groups and as well as anti-big government groups that were in favor of some sunset commission experiments in the states. Although it's turned out, actually, that many of these sunset commissions in the states ultimately were ended because it proved to be too costly for the savings that they were going to realize.
Yeah, and in a survey the National Conference of State Legislatures conducted, they found that, 45 states responded, 32 had sunset commissions at some point, but only half of them felt like it was worthwhile to keep, and half said, no, these aren't worthwhile. So it really is a toss-up as to whether or not they're effective and cost-effective themselves.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, the model, or the state commission that's held up as a model for a federal commission is Texas. But it turns out that there was actually recently a bipartisan effort in Texas to try to pull back even on their sunset commission because it's they're deriding it as full employment for lobbyists. During the time that the legislature is not in session, the Sunset Commission is doing its work, and so the lobbyists who are not knocking on the doors of their legislators are knocking on the doors of the Sunset Commission.
Now, where does that Texas Sunset Commission come from? What time frame are we talking about?
Well, I think it was actually created during the same time period that most of the experiments were launched.
Okay, so 70s and 80s?
70s and 80s.
Okay.
Right.
Now, George W. Bush happens to occupy the office of the presidency for the past 5 years. He was governor of Texas before that. What's his relationship to the Texas Sunset Commission at the time he was in office there?
Well, I don't know his relationship to the Texas State Sunset Commission, but I can say that in recent months or in recent years, it's the Bush White House that really started to change some of the dynamics at the federal level on sunset commissions.
Okay, how so?
Well, these concepts of, you know, there have been bills that have been introduced over the years, and they've just never gone anywhere. But last year, the Bush administration actually put out its own proposal for a sunset commission at the federal level, which was a change of course from previous administrations, which have argued that some of the different proposals that have been put out have been unconstitutional or might not be worth their while. But the Bush administration put out its own proposal last year with the budget. Although that was a dramatic change, these federal attempts at a sunset commission still weren't really going anywhere until just recently when the House GOP was having some trouble getting votes within the Republican caucus for their budget resolution. And there was a lot of wheeling and dealing with the different factions within the Republican Party in the House. And the Republican Study Committee, which is a group of particularly conservative members, extracted a few concessions from GOP leadership in exchange for their votes on the budget resolution. And one of their demands was a guaranteed floor vote sometime this summer on sunset commissions.
Now, there's several different bills making their way through the House at the moment. There is, and I only have numbers for two of them, there's H.R. 2470 by Representative Todd Tyart, Republican out of Kansas, and then there's Representative Kevin Brady, Republican from Texas, with H.R. 3277. And in something that you wrote back in April at ombwatch.org about the Sunset Commission, you say that the Tyart bill appears to be the leading contender for future consideration. Is that still accurate a couple months down the road?
Yes, and actually what's come about is that GOP Majority Leader Boehner is leading negotiations with sponsors of some of the Sunset bills that have been introduced and others who are interested in the concept. And they're trying to craft a new bill that's going to be the bill that gets the floor vote. And they're using the Tyart bill as the centerpiece. And they're probably pulling other elements from the different bills, from the other bills, and what we fear will be the worst of the worst.
Okay, well, I actually have H.R. 2470 in front of me, and I read it last night. I didn't read the others, just because there's only so much legislation I'm willing to read late at night.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the scope of these bills and the composition of the commissions, kind of like, you know, how if these pass, what are we talking about here?
Right. All right, well, these commissions, if we look at the Tyart bill, one of the first things to note is that this Tyart, this Sunset Commission, would be exempted from open government laws. So it would be impossible for the public to know what's going on. If there are programs that they care about that are being put on the chopping block, they don't necessarily know that they're on the chopping block, and they don't have any way of coming in to try to save their programs. Now, I keep using the word program because that's the word that's used in the bill, but it's defined as any activity or function of an agency. So this could be very, very, very broad. I mean, it could mean a program. I mean, it could mean, say, the National Toxicology Program, which produces what's considered the gold standard scientific report on what substances out there are carcinogenic. Or it could be something like the HOPE 6 housing program. Or it could be something a little bit more subtle. It's really unclear. It could be something like there are 60 different statutes out there that have Davis-Bacon Act-type protections. And those are basically commands that if you're the federal government and you're doing some contracting, you have to make sure that the folks you contract with pay the prevailing wage in that area so that they're not undercutting the wages that workers are getting out there. Some of those protections could be stripped out, or civil rights protections that are embedded in a host of different statutes. Those could all fall by the wayside.
And then there's many things related to, say, neonatal care and young child assistance type programs, Head Start, school,
exactly,
school lunch, after school programs, et cetera, environmental protection, really kind of everything except, and this is important, the Department of Defense.
Exactly.
Yeah, because there's no waste, fraud, or abuse, and it's really not that much of the budget anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, why even bother to look at the Department of Defense?
Right.
I think the Tyart bill also exempts entitlement programs, which is very generous, but the Republican Study Committee and others out there in Congress actually have their eye on entitlements in other ways. So this is that's not even much of an exemption either.
Well, in the way the description or the definition of entitlement program is written in the TIART bill, you basically have to be a lawyer to figure out what it means. It's
exactly.
Only about 40 words, but I mean, entitlement program, we hear it all the time, but is there a consistent definition across the federal government of what entitlement program is, or is it subject to each piece of legislation?
There are some differing definitions out there. I mean, there's one basic definition that folks know, and that's the programs that basically get automatically funded every year that aren't part of the annual budget and appropriations battles. So you think of things like Social Security. I mean, that money automatically, the money that goes to Social Security recipients automatically gets allocated. That's not part of deciding, it's not part of the process that people go through every year where they're trying to decide which programs get what amount of money. So, that would be things like Social Security, foster care and adoption assistance, Medicare, Medicaid. Those kinds of programs are generally those that are considered entitlements. But you're right. I mean, there's some really confusing definitions there as well. So it's what any agency that solely administers entitlement programs, well, that's not that much. I mean, there are lots of agencies out there that administer multiple programs. But, you know, just to step back a bit, you know, one thing that I tell members of Congress when we're going up on the Hill to talk about sunset commissions is we understand that there are probably some programs that would be immune from being sunsetted. Nobody is going to kill the Department of Veterans Affairs, for example. But there are a lot of programs out there that are really important to veterans that have nothing to do with the VA. For example, all the vets who live in rural communities, who live miles away from any VA clinics, they're really dependent on rural health care programs. And those are exactly the programs that the Bush administration has been putting on the budget chopping block year in and year out. Congress has been able to save them, but with the Sunset Commission, and it's like fast-track process, that's a second way that you're putting those programs on the chopping block. And if you're limiting Congress's ability to make amendments or to have any actual debate on these important decisions, you really could be tying Congress's hands and keeping them from saving the very programs that we need.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. My name is Andrew Geller, and Robert Schull is my guest. He's the Director of Regulatory Policy at OMB Watch. We're discussing sunset commissions and legislation that Congress is attempting to fast-track through, I guess, before their summer break. You can find out more by going to www.ombwatch.org. And then click for the Sunset Resource Action Center. And you can also go to the People Rise Up page at kboo.fm, click on Public Affairs, and then People Rise Up. So we've talked a little bit about some of the aspects of the Sunset Commission. You touched earlier in a sort of joking way about the concept of lifetime employment for lobbyists. So tell us what the composition of a federal sunset commission could look like, and how long would it exist? Is this a sort of permanent thing forever after, should legislation pass?
Right. Okay. Well, these are small commissions. I think that the largest commission that was proposed was something like 12 members. Here's where some of the different bills differ over whether who gets to make the appointments to the commission. Now, they're all unelected. One bill would have the White House making appointments all by itself. One would have the White House, in consultation with Congress, making all of the appointments. And then another one would have the White House and then different leaders of the majority and minority parties in each House of Congress making appointments, equal numbers of appointments. But with that approach, that's not really a bipartisan approach, because if you have, say, a 15-member commission with nine of them appointed by the party that controls the presidency, and then the other six appointed by the minority party of Congress, and you're already tilting the playing field really significantly. Now, who would be on these commissions? I mean, honestly, God only knows. You know, we can look back to the example of the Grace Commission from the early 80s when Ronald Reagan appointed a commission that would, he wanted to look at government and propose solutions for reform, and it turned out to be felons, basically. You know, big corporations like Grace and Company that were responsible for all kinds of environmental securities and other violations that produced a set of recommendations that were basically about eliminating the very regulations that they were responsible for violating. Now, with a commission like this, suppose, you know, instead of that kind of self-dealing, you had government contractors. You know, the Bush administration has been trying to get rid of something like 850,000 federal jobs and to privatize them. Well, you could put contractors on this commission who have an interest in divvying up the federal government and deciding which piece they want to have in their own hands.
Now, going back to the TIAART bill, Section 7B3 is the report or discharge section,
yeah,
and it's followed by 7C regarding floor consideration. And basically what it says is that if the commission makes a recommendation, a bill must be introduced within a certain short time frame. It's assigned to the relevant committee, and they have a chunk of time. But if they don't get to it, it's automatically discharged and guaranteed House floor consideration without amendment.
Yes.
And my question is this normal? Does this happen in any other context? Because that's not how I understand, how the government theoretically produces legislation.
Right. That is not the democratic process. Now, they've taken this idea from BRAC, which was the Commission for Base Realignment and Closures.
Domestic military bases.
Exactly. And Congress basically decided to tie its own hands because there were a lot of parochial interests involved. I mean, somebody who has a base in his or her own backyard sees that base and sees a lot of jobs and doesn't want that base going away. But we didn't need all of these bases, and so Congress decided we'll have to try to pull ourselves back and come up with a process that's less open to politics and less open to these sort of parochial concerns. Now, that doesn't really apply to federal government, because you're talking about things like Head Start or welfare or government cheese or whatever it is you're talking about. And these programs apply across the country. There's just, you don't have that same level of parochial concern that was the concern that drove BRAC. You also, of course, BRAC actually had Senate confirmation for the members who were of the commission who were appointed, lots and lots and lots of public hearings and open government provisions that kept it accountable. This is an unaccountable commission. And if some of the other bills were to have their elements grafted onto the TIAART bill, then you could have basically a permanent commission that exists and puts programs on the treadmill every 10 years or every 12 years and is constantly doing this work and constantly doing it behind closed doors.
Now, you folks put the issue of sunset commissions in a kind of urgent context for listeners and others to take action and contact their members of Congress. So
yes.
My question is, why is there this sudden push, seemingly, in Congress, and how does the election cycle play into that?
I think a huge part of it had to do with the new leadership of the Republican caucus in the House and the need for the majority leader to consolidate his relationships with the different factions, including the Republican Study Committee. The Republican Study Committee is a big enough block in the House that they can exert enormous amounts of pressure, but they also haven't been getting their way a lot recently, and so they really needed to be placated. And when they demanded their floor vote in exchange for their votes on the budget resolution, well, they got it. And now a lot of things are happening. Now you have this a new bill in the Senate that I think it's considered dead on arrival. It has sunset commissions and other budget process reforms, including line item veto. And it's considered, I think, dead on arrival, but it probably is, as you implicated in your question, has a lot to do with the upcoming election and the need for the Republican Party to reach out and show to its base that it is attacking the big government problem that it has always said it's going to attack.
Although the Bush administration has significantly expanded not only the monetary aspect of federal spending, but the number of people involved in the federal government in making that happen.
Right. Well, so consistency is not one of their virtues.
Yeah, it's a pretty big disconnect. Now, I'm curious, you mentioned some of the backers and the key supporters, not in name, at least in context, Republican leadership, etc. OMB Watch is working against this effort. Who else is working on this, and what sort of media coverage have you been able to generate?
It's been exciting, actually. We've managed to create a really large, wide-ranging coalition with hundreds of groups representing education, the environment, housing, consumer groups. It's really exciting to see. I mean, we've been led by a core group that includes a couple of labor unions, NRDC, Public Citizen, the National Head Start Association, the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and some more groups that I'm suddenly going to regret not having named. But we've managed to also see some interest in the news. Actually, Rolling Stone magazine was pivotal. They wrote a nice, substantial article
last year when
the White House put out its proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Daily Coast picked it up. And so we're starting to see some interest, mostly in Washington trade press. But as things accelerate, I think we'll probably see more.
There's a really fascinating quote here from a lobbyist for the Union of Concerned Scientists, a great group out of, Cambridge, Massachusetts, referencing the proposal from the Bush White House regarding sunset commissions. And this lobbyist said, quote, "When you look at this, it's almost like the Reagan administration was a trial run."
Right.
Now, anyone old enough to understand the context of that should be appropriately scared by this. And also, we're running low on time here. And one fascinating thing about the Rolling Stone article I haven't seen referenced anywhere else is this guy named Clay Johnson. Longtime friend of George W. Bush. They roomed at Andover, met when they were 15, and he's basically been tracking him, working with him for the last four decades or so. He's the head of at the time of the Rolling Stone article, he was the director of the Office of Management and Budget, OMB. And this is really the guy behind this in terms of implementing it from the Bush administration perspective, and I'd never heard of him.
Right. That's a name you should look into.
Yeah.
He's behind a lot of things that we've been tracking that we see as really problematic initiatives coming out of the White House.
So, in just closing up, what is it you want folks to do?
Take action. Members of Congress have their own ideas, but they'll change them if they hear from you. We really need folks out there to pick up the phone and call their congressman. We need them to send letters. It really does matter, and it adds up. They count up how many phone calls they get and how many letters they get. And if they hear from you, they'll realize that it's a problem.
And what's the time frame for this? Do we have, I've seen a couple of vague allusions to floor vote, summertime, July.
Right.
Are we talking before the recess? Is this later in the summer?
It's apparently a moving target. The most recent intelligence is that that they're going to come up in the first couple of weeks of July after they get back from the July 4th recess. And we will keep, we will maintain updates on the latest news that we hear at ombwatch.org/sunset. And people can actually go there, and if they want to follow through and take action, that's a great place that they can go.
All right, great. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time to explain all of this to us. Robert Schull is the Director of Regulatory Policy at OMB Watch, and as he just said, you can find out more about sunset commissions and other things that they are up to at OMB Watch online at www.ombwatch.org. Thank you very much for being on the program this morning, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
All right, take care.
And
you can also go to the People Rise Up website. Go to kboo.fm, click the link for public affairs in the left column, and then the link for People Rise Up. If you have any questions or comments about anything that you heard on this program or any of my prior programs, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. If you like sending paper mail, you can send it to me, Andrew Geller, KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. This program will be archived at archive.org. You search for my name in the open source audio section, and you'll see a list of everything I have there. The People Rise Up page at kboo.fm has links to both the archive.org site as well as the radioforall.net site, which contains older material. I appreciate you listening to the program, and thank you for that. For those of you listening locally here in Portland, I want to let you know about an event tomorrow night, Thursday, June 29th, 7 p.m. It takes place at the Portland State University Smith Center Multicultural Room 228. And if you go there at that time, tomorrow, you can learn about the culture of the indigenous Canari people of Ecuador. Felix Chuma will be speaking about the history and traditional dance, music, and medicine of his people. He will also be presenting a vision for a sustainable project of ethno-ecotourism between the people of Portland and his village in Ecuador. There will be food, Andean music, and a way for you to find out how you can contribute your unique skills and talents to this project. That's tomorrow, Thursday the 29th, 7 p.m., Portland State University Smith Center down on Broadway in the, 1800 block, Southwest Broadway. PSU Smith Center Multicultural Center. Coming up next, Will Seaman has part one of a two-part interview. Part two will take place at this time next Wednesday. He is speaking with Amira Haas. This was recorded April 22nd of this year, and this is a part of a panel discussion on From Occupation to Enclosure, Fragmenting the Palestinian State. The panel discussion included Palestinian-Canadian lawyer Diana Boutu. But Ms. Boutu's presentation involved slides. Oh, okay, so never mind. I don't even have to tell you that. It's not on here. Anyway, so we'll go straight to Will Seaman, and I'll have a little bit of ancillary-related news at the back end.